Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are Going In Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing? Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the only pro wrestling podcast you need to be listening to right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson. And anywhere fine podcasts are available, be sure to hit that subscribe button.
And if you're on YouTube, that little bell notify deal that lets you know whenever new Going In Raw content is coming out. We're also available on the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. A bevy of reward tiers that we're offering up, including... at the $5 best value mark.
Best value.
Three. Count them, three weekly live streams. We'll recap Raw, SmackDown. What was that?
That was yours.
That was weird.
Why did your recycle bin just recycle or
I
your trash?
I have no idea.
Just do that. That was the sound.
That was a little oddball there.
That was strange.
It was trying to tell me not to get on the Patreon, but you should. Like it was saying before, I was really interrupted by my rig. Three weekly live streams where you can interact with us and watch the podcast and listen to it before anybody else. We're also available at Pro Wrestling
Tees. Hold on.
What? What?
I was going to provide an update for the $200,000 tier.
Oh, well, let's find out if anybody's cut us a $200,000 check. Give me too sweet, Larson. Oh, well, look at your beard. You did stuff with it.
Yeah.
Nice. Give me too sweet.
No.
Your beard. No?
No one's contributed.
I don't think they're technically able to.
Yeah, we have to work that out.
We have to work it out. I'm not going to put any more effort into a tier that number one, neither of us wants to happen, nor will it ever happen. That's in the back of your mind. You think, I know you, you think that maybe, just maybe. You're like, you're actually torn over this. Maybe, just maybe there's a billionaire out there who likes us and for a gag is fine with giving up $200,000 to us.
It's a possibility.
And in your head, you're thinking, what am I going to do with that? In your mind, what are the odds of that happening?
Oh, very small.
Give me a number.
0.001%.
No, I think in your head it's like 20%.
No. I gave you an honest answer.
I think it's honestly 20%.
No, because if it were going to happen, it would have happened by now.
You think so?
Yeah, if someone who was independently wealthy happened to watch the show and really enjoyed our work, who was able to cut a check of that size,
yeah,
they haven't done it yet.
What if they're waiting for their massive inheritance to come in? That could be. ProWrestlingTees.com/Going In Raw. You guys can check out. We have 10.
10.
I have to take a picture of your face today.
Yeah, then once that happens, 11 will be on the way.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. 12, actually, because I have some ideas as well.
Mm.
I'm going to do some stuff.
Mm.
Anyways, so today we're going to talk about
New Japan Pro Wrestling's show that happened over the weekend, Dominion.
Sort of like their SummerSlam.
It is like their SummerSlam.
Yeah. I'm sort of sorting out in my head whether or not this was... here's the only reason in my head why this wasn't better than Wrestle Kingdom. It's the only reason. Three words. New Japan Rumble. Wasn't there. They only do that for Wrestle Kingdom. So because there was no New Japan Rumble, But otherwise, I thought match-wise, this stacked up.
It was a very good show.
It was a very, very good show. Although there was some... Yeah, Wrestle Kingdom was better.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons why, but match-wise, it matched up pretty well.
Well, I think like the Naito Tanahashi match at Wrestle Kingdom was better.
Yeah, me too. I thought there was a
this one seemed like they I don't know if it was there were chemistry issues or what, but there's a couple spots where it seemed a little rough.
It seemed a little rough, and I also felt like they didn't really go after the one thing that they could have gone after, which was Tanahashi's torn bicep.
Oh, Naito worked at that a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see it. It didn't feel like it was as much of the story as it should have been. Like, he was pulling off moves that I felt like he shouldn't have.
You mean Tanahashi? Yeah,
Tanahashi was pulling off moves that he wasn't selling it all that much.
Yeah.
Naito was going after it, but I didn't feel it. It wasn't, I'll put it this way, it wasn't to the degree that Suzuki was going after Okada's knee in their match.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just felt that there was, the story there I felt at Wrestle Kingdom was much more well told.
Yes.
So, and then as much as I like Don Callis, I like Cyrus, I like him a lot. He's no Steve Corino. Steve Corino and Kevin Kelly had some special chemistry.
Yes.
In how little it's like, dude, when somebody's flying under the radar, it's just so much more entertaining.
I know.
And I wonder if because of the added pressure of the U.S. global expansion, I wonder if the higher ups are, I'm not going to suggest this as a possibility. I wonder if going forward they're going to have a bit more restrictions placed on them. I didn't really feel like that was the case here. I thought they were
were. But I think your point about Corino and Kevin Kelly's chemistry is a good one because their chemistry was fantastic, and that chemistry isn't quite there.
I think I just
with
felt
Callis and Kelly because they haven't been doing it as long.
I think there's that for sure. I think I just felt Corino's style of commentary personally. It just sort of my personal predilections. Like when he was dying laughing for all the cussing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something Don Callis would necessarily do.
No, I think Corino is a bit more humorous.
Yeah, yeah.
Callis I think is a bit more serious.
Callis is a bit more serious. He tries to be the heel commentator a bit more.
Yeah.
And Corino and Kelly, it was just hilarious. It was just like a couple of guys watching. That was the appeal. It was like a react video, essentially.
Pretty much.
Or doing a react video.
Pretty much.
To New Japan Live. It was great. But anyways, let's kick this off. And then we're going to talk about the main event endlessly because there's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, I wrote down some extensive notes.
It was a brilliant... I mean, in my mind, it's funny because they did tell such a different story than they did at Wrestle Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, they upped the drama level, and to me, it made it a superior watching experience.
Yeah, I made the mistake of seeing what happened before I watched it.
Yeah, that plays a big factor, and I think, probably in your opinion.
Yeah, it does. And so it sucked a bit of the drama out for me.
Yeah, I miraculously, I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know how you did either.
I have no, because I got on Twitter the next morning, and I was kind of careful. I was a little bit on the careful side, but one tweet would have ruined the entire
thing.
Here's
the thing, based on all the tweets I saw, because I saw a tweet from some dirt sheet that had the results, and I was like, okay, it's first thing in the morning, I'm curious what happened. Because it said something like title changes.
Yeah.
At Dominion, I was like, oh, okay, maybe Kenny won.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other tweets, by and large, were spoiler-free. That like, oh my gosh, great match, six
right, star, yeah, that's that what I saw too, stuff. Yeah, that's what I saw too.
So, credit to people out there for not spoiling the finish.
And I saw no pictures of Kenny holding the title.
Yeah.
I saw one picture, I think the Young Bucks themselves tweeted out a picture of one of the guys, I think it was Matt. Who's the older one?
Matt has the sideburns.
Okay, Matt. Cradling the title like Jordan cradled the championship.
Those were the tag championships.
What's that?
That was the tag championships.
No, I know. That's okay. Why I knew they won.
Oh, okay.
And so that was the only spoiler that I really saw besides some of the amazing Taguchi Japan comedy stuff.
Oh yeah.
The baseball stuff was amazing.
And Taguchi Japan has my new favorite theme.
Yes, me too.
It's fantastic.
I'm totally with you on that.
It's fantastic.
I love what they're doing, but let's start at the beginning.
Yes.
Tiger Mask W, who's Kota Ibushi, which still, you have Kota Ibushi.
I know, but
I need to go back and watch that 45th anniversary.
Yeah, Okada. But he's, you know, since he's under a freelance deal, you know, I don't know if New Japan wants to give him a prominent spot when he's not full-time, you know? Yeah. I know it seems odd that he's not Kota Ibushi.
Yeah.
Because he's a huge star.
I know. And I'm trying to think of, like, an American equivalent to that. If Finn Balor all of a sudden put on a mask and was Johnny Bravo. You know, I know it's different. In Japan, they take their animation a lot more seriously than we do here. I get that. And I get that. I mean, honestly, just I think the culture understands pro wrestling different than we do to a degree. It's like an alternate universe, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great. It's just odd.
At Wrestle Kingdom, when Tiger Mask W had his match against... It was Kota Ibushi and ACH.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino were not being shy about alluding to who those wrestlers were while they were wrestling as Tiger Mask.
I would imagine, and I have no idea if anybody out there knows the Japanese language and watches it through that commentary. I'd love to know if the Japanese commentators protect that a bit more. I would imagine they do. But I don't know. I don't know how tongue-in-cheek they get. I'd love to know.
Yeah, me too.
But anyways, Tiger Mask W, Makabe and Yuji Nagata versus Tenzan Kojima Jushin Liger, who got a massive pop because he's sort of on his retirement tour, I think, mm-hmm. and Nakanishi all had a big cluster match.
Yeah.
It was a fun match, though.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it was cool.
It was.
You got to see you love those chops.
Oh, yeah, when Kojima does the chops in the corner.
Kojima's the best.
He's the best.
He loves bread.
He does love
and
bread.
And he does those fast stuff. Nothing will ever beat when Cheeseburger did him.
Yeah.
That was good stuff. Makabe ended up going over with a top rope knee drop.
Yeah.
But it was... Oh, wait a second. You didn't put the... Where's the Young Lion match?
I didn't watch that one.
Oh, yeah.
I was under, you know, I didn't have all day to watch.
Who's the big jacked guy? I forget his name.
I do too.
Yeah, but they're violating, I feel, the Young Lion law, which is nothing but
really?
The jacked guy had a mouth guard that looked like fangs.
Oh, okay.
You're Young Lion. You're Young Lion.
So he should just have a plain mouth guard.
He needs to go on his excursion first.
Plain mouth guard.
I have no idea what I'm talking about.
You don't.
But he's jacked. He's learning a lot. He's very good. Dave Finley picked up the win with a stunner. Dave Finley, he updated his trunks a little bit, which I like.
Good.
Now I love when they're vinyl and not like loose cloth. I don't like when it looks like somebody's wearing just their undies out there.
The thing with that, though, is I don't think vinyl stretches very well.
Okay.
So then they need to be perfectly tailored.
I think they were perfect because I did not see any slippage, no balls, no butt cheek. Didn't do a weird thing where it rode the butt cheek and the butt cheek was hanging out. That's always weird.
But they fit well, perfectly.
Fit perfectly.
Good.
He was all full of swagger.
Good.
I love Finley. He's great.
Good.
I wonder if he needs to hit the gym a little bit more or if he even cares. He doesn't care. Who cares?
He doesn't look uncomfortable.
Kind of looking like Steve out there.
But he doesn't look
a little
uncomfortable.
Bit.
He does not look uncomfortable.
Oh, he doesn't. He's all confidence, that Finley kid.
Yeah.
I love him. Loved his dad, too. So that was like the dark match, because then they go to like the empty ring. And then they go to the actual card.
Yeah.
So after the Tiger Mask match,
we had a gauntlet match.
Oh, I love this. This is so much fun.
Yeah, this was fun. For the Never Six-Man Openweight tag team titles.
Not the overweight tag titles.
Thursdays are long days.
No, it was funny. I liked it because it was funny when you said it. I was like, I'm not gonna correct them, whatever. When you sent it to me, I was like, oh, because I didn't really think about it in terms of like overweight title.
Yeah,
I just thought you said overweight. Like I didn't put the two words together.
Yeah, no, that happened on Dirt Sheet when we did our predictions.
And then you sent it to me, and I was like, oh, that's funny. They have an overweight title.
So I didn't notice it when I said it.
Guess what Steve's going to be fighting for? The overweight title. Gauntlet match. Yeah, this is great. So start out...
With Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, the Tokyo Pimp, and Hangman Page taking on the Chaos team of Yano, Ishii, and Yoshihashi.
Loose explosion. Oof.
Well, he'll be coming back later.
Yeah, I know.
This first match of the Gauntlet match featured lots of cussing.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
And then Yano eventually did low blows on both Page and Tokyo Pimp.
Should have seen that coming because I thought this was like, I was driving around my car yesterday. I had to take the girls to the mall, and I just had Bullet Club theme bumping.
Oh, I thought you were singing it to yourself the whole time.
Bullet Club. Yeah. I thought they were going to sweep. They did not sweep, but they came damn near close. It was a very Bullet Club heavy night.
They were 2-for-4.
Hold on a second now. They lost that one. Cody won.
Okay, so 3 for 5.
3 for 5. It's better than half.
60%.
It's good.
It's not bad.
But anyways, yeah, Bullet Club started out. That's why. So it was Bullet Club versus Chaos. They started out. Yano should have seen that coming. He has to get at least one low blow.
Yeah,
low
and he low blowed both.
He had the
or
same
two
yeah.
Of the Bullet Club competitors and pinned, was it Tokyo Pimp?
It was either him or Paige.
Yeah.
I think they're not having
with roll up.
Yeah.
Got the win. Out next, Team Suzuki-Gun.
Suzuki-Gun.
Which was Taichi. Kanemaru and Zack Sabre Jr.
Love Zack Sabre Jr.
And Zack Sabre Jr. pretty quickly pinned Yano.
Started mocking his pose.
When he was still in the roll-up.
Yeah.
You know, he had a thing where he bends backward and you know, props himself up with his head.
Yeah.
It's a very strong neck. Somebody's there just as the three count happens.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Upside down. It was fantastic and got up and started doing it more.
Yeah.
It was great. Next was Taguchi Japan. Great theme song.
I love
the matching shirts, the matching jackets.
I love everything great. About this. I love their sort of official picture of them all in line looking up.
Yeah, it's very good.
It is very good. Yeah, like you said, they had matching gear. They're like the funnest, like, bowling league team, you know?
Yeah.
It's so great. And there was a lot of comedy in their bits. They did this amazing bit. There's, like, just of it out there. And I figured you would appreciate this being a baseball aficionado. Taguchi
was squatting in front of.
So they had somebody, one of their guys, they had a Zack Sabre Jr. in the corner, and they sort of beat him down in the corner. And then Taguchi knelt down in a catcher's position.
Yeah, and started giving signs.
Started giving signs for Ricochet, who was then portraying the pitcher.
Yes.
And behind him was Juice Robinson,
who was the baseball.
So Ricochet nodded off a couple of calls, and then he accepted. And then he
goes in the windup, throws,
wind up.
And then Juice runs down towards Sabre and does
cannonball.
A cannonball onto him. It was a good spot.
It was fantastic. Then Suzuki tried to do their own. They did a football field goal against Taguchi.
No, it was a penalty kick.
A penalty kick, that's right.
Soccer.
Soccer, yeah. Football.
Yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. set that up.
So that was good. There was one other good – Ricochet was Ricochet.
He's phenomenal.
He's like one of my top – They need to push him.
Mm-hmm.
They need to. I don't know what like contract they need him at. Like I know there's like the Lucha Underground thing. Maybe they're waiting for that to resolve. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Ricochet needs to be put. He's amazing.
He's amazing.
He's fantastic. Like he's one of my top three favorites right now, dude. It's him, AJ, and Kenny.
He's so good.
And Okada's up there too. Okada's so good.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of cool moments in this. There was another thing that I wanted to point out. I forgot what it was. There was a lot of good stuff. I did notice this, though. Juice Robinson, I inadvertently stole Booty Juice's essential gimmick from him because he comes out and his number is 69 as well.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, a sexual being is his gimmick, apparently.
Well, actually, both on the front, Juice and Taguchi had 69, but Juice had a different number on his back. Taguchi had 69.
Interesting. Oh, I thought it was Juice. Okay, they both had 69
on the
front.
Interesting. Ricochet had 88.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Juice.
Ricochet's too classy to be, you know.
Juice had 70. I don't know if it's 73 or something like that. It wasn't 69.
Interesting.
It was on the front, but not on the back.
Okay. But well, and of course, the Pulp Fiction. That's the porno, the parody of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Anyways, Juice Robinson went over. What do you think the odds are Juice Robinson going to pick up the U.S. title?
We'll talk about that.
A lot of heavy hitters in that tournament.
Yes, I have a theory.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That I will run by
you. Naito is going to start tearing up that U.S. belt?
No.
No, it's not your theory? It's not my
theory.
I have a theory. Okay.
We'll talk about the because the card for all of Day 1 and most of Day 2 were released this morning for the G1 specials in Long Beach.
Yes.
So we'll cover that at the end of the show.
All right, sounds good, because we're going to be there. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So anyway, we'll see. Juice Robinson ended up getting the pin on Taichi after he hit his Pulp Fiction. He tried that a couple times, but he finally hit it.
Yes.
So it was good. Taguchi Japan, I'm all in, dude.
Yeah, they're wildly entertaining.
They're fantastic.
So that what set us up for Taguchi Japan versus LIJ.
Yeah.
Evil, Bushi, and Sonata.
Yes.
But before, as Evil was walking out, Suzuki-Gun attacked Taguchi Japan.
Correct.
Zack Sabre Jr. put Taguchi, right?
I think probably Taguchi.
In the octopus.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that's one of the parts I was going to mention. Taguchi was up in the corner, like, wiggling his butt, and then he doesn't realize, but then he does realize
oh, yeah.
that Suzuki-Gun's behind him. Was it Suzuki-gun or was it Tai Chi and Kanemaru, maybe? I forget. But then they're Suzuki-gun. I was thinking of something else. And then he, like, tries to politely get to his corner.
Yeah. Oh, no, he tries
they're,
to,
they're
like,
walk cutting by. Off his corner, and he tried to politely get a hot tag.
I know. It was pretty funny.
He didn't let him. It was great. Anyways, so, yeah, that set up the final sort of matchup, which was Taguchi Japan versus, like you said, L.I.J. And, yeah, this was fun. But, yeah, like you said, Suzuki-gun got the better of Taguchi Japan. They sort of handicapped them from the outset.
Yeah. So,
that spot with Ricochet, that was planned, right? That was a work.
Kind of weird, though. I think the spot was he was supposed to catch him for a powerbomb.
Yeah.
But it just... I don't know how they could have successfully done that spot.
Did they practice that to success, or did they just say, no, we can totally do this? Because... all the force coming down. So they did like a superplex.
Yeah.
On who was it? Sonata? Was it Sonata?
I think so.
Big dude. That's a bad move to try to do that on.
And so Ricochet. Yeah, they did a superplex, and then Ricochet got up and was supposed to catch his legs. So on impact, he powerbombed.
Because yeah, he was like Sonata or whoever from LIJ it was. I think it was Sonata. Was coming down so that his legs were hitting Ricochet's shoulders.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like you said, it was kind of obvious that he was supposed to, like, then powerbomb him.
Yeah.
But instead, the force of that just destroyed Ricochet. I mean, I guess he was kind of lucky, I mean, that he didn't get hurt because that,
I know.
That was a lot of force coming down.
I know.
But Ricochet got right back up. Like, so that's, you're probably right. That's probably supposed to be the spot.
Yeah, and I really want to see a Ricochet Sonata feud.
Oh, it'd be great.
Oh, man.
That'd be fantastic.
Give that to me, please.
Both so athletic. They went out for a bit, but in the end, Bushi got the pin on Taguchi.
After MX, which is a top rope code breaker.
Oh, yeah. Look good.
So, a really fun gauntlet match.
Mm-hmm.
LIJ, still your never open weight.
Overweight.
Six-man tag team champions.
That led to, this is a really great match.
Yeah, it was.
Roppongi Vice versus the Young Bucks. A little bit of, I don't want to say controversy here, but one of the Bucks was took issue with a lot of people's response to this match on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Well, they said, you know, I know Meltzer mentioned this specifically, but I guess according to, I want to say it's Nick, was on Twitter, and he was calling out people for calling out. It was kind of interesting. He said, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, the Young Bucks are storytelling in the ring now. And he says, we do that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I think, no, I mean, I kind of get, I actually kind of get what he's saying. I could see the other side to that because they're most well-known for being a high-spot team.
Yeah, but I mean, why are wrestlers getting criticized at all for telling a story in the ring?
The funny thing is, here's the thing, it didn't sound like anybody was criticizing. It sounded like people were saying, oh, wow, the Young Bucks are telling a story in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm one of the Young Bucks,
okay, they were thinking, wait, we always do that.
What are you talking about?
Gotcha.
That's where he was. So he was sort of annoyed that people were saying now they're doing it when he feels they've always been doing it. But I kind of see, you know, this was a very storytelling heavy.
Well, their previous match at Wrestle Kingdom was too.
This was a direct sequel to that, though.
Yep.
That's what I liked about this. Yep. This was a direct sequel. There were multiple references to their Wrestle Kingdom match. But it was really good. This was an amazing match. Like they basically had a strategy going into this, take out Rocky Romero, mm-hmm. focus on Trent Beretta.
Yes, because last time Trent did the top rope plancha onto mm-hmm. nothing.
Onto nothing.
And that kind of took him out of the match for the most part.
Right.
Until Roppongi Vice won.
Right.
And so commentary really helped enhance, mm-hmm. remind audiences who hadn't just watched Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
What happened last time, and so the Young Bucks decide instead of, okay, let's take out Trent, let's take out Rocky Romero and then focus our offense on Trent.
Right, exactly.
Like you mentioned. So early on, I think it was Matt Jackson, powerbombed Rocky Romero into the apron, picked him up,
mm-hmm.
and I almost thought he was going to do like a forever thing mm-hmm. where he hit his back in one ring post.
Oh, I kind of looked like
and
that.
And then
yeah.
ran to the other ring post. Yeah. And did, I thought he was going to run back and forth and do forever
like Rocky Romero does
with his clothesline.
Yeah.
Didn't do that. But after he hit Rocky Romero twice, his back into the ring post, gave him another apron powerbomb. Mm-hmm. And so Rocky Romero is on the outside writhing in pain.
Yeah.
So the Young Bucks is more or less double-teamed Trent Beretta for the vast majority of, you know, the first part of this match.
Right. Trent did another plancha off.
Yes.
Out the ring. Successfully. This time he hit it, yeah.
At one point, Rocky, you know, gets off the mat on the outside, tries to get back in the ring. Matt Jackson picks him up, runs him halfway up the ramp, and powerbombs him on the ramp.
Yeah.
It was pretty neat.
One thing I noticed about this match, too, and I think that might be some of what people are noticed about this match that I guess Nick took issue with, was I didn't notice, and maybe it was me not noticing it, but I noticed the Young Bucks had a bit more of a serious vibe to them.
Yes.
In this match. They're well known for shit-talking their entire matches.
And they did for the beginning a little bit, but after that, they were like mean Young Bucks.
Yeah, exactly, which I liked. I thought it was good. It was changing it up a little bit. That's not talking crap about anybody.
No. So Rocky, once again, gets back into the match. At one point, Trent gets Matt Jackson in position for his finisher. Rocky gets up on the apron. They hit Strong Zero, their finisher, and then Nick gets on the top rope and breaks it up with a Swanton. That looked rough.
On his back.
Yeah, that looked rough.
Yeah, because he had him. He had like the.
He had Trent. Trent had Matt kind of rolled up.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the finish to that move is essentially Trent sitting on top of his opponent.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of somewhat bent over.
Yeah, bent over.
Nick does the Swanton right on Trent's back, so it.
It was back
pulls him
back.
Over.
Yeah, exactly, pulls him
over further. And then also Matt's legs are getting pushed more towards his chest.
Yeah, that did look rough.
That looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, no kidding.
After that, the Young Bucks kind of took Trent somewhat out of the match, and they were really focusing their offense on Rocky Romero's back.
Yeah.
So they tried to give him the sharpshooter several times. There was a lot of sharpshooter spots. And one of them, Rocky's in the sharpshooter. Matt has him in the sharpshooter. Rocky's trying to get to the ropes.
Oh,
and
that was
Nick
good.
Nick Jackson does a springboard X Factor onto Rocky.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Eventually, the Young Bucks performed the Indy Taker on Rocky, and then right into a sharpshooter. He passed out.
Yeah,
Young Bucks win.
I mean, again,
really fun match. Really good storytelling.
Again, I just feel like the Young Bucks are adding to their repertoire.
Yes,
and. I don't see how that could be a criticism, you know. It's like you should always be adding stuff, and it's like, yeah, I haven't seen every Young Bucks match there is, but you know, it's not meant as a criticism. This felt like a match with some depth.
Yeah,
and I think maybe one of the things is, I wonder if a lot of what people know of the Young Bucks. Is what they see in very brief highlight clips.
You see the spots.
They see the spots. They know the spots. They know the comedy aspect of what they do. They know the meta aspect of what they do.
Yeah.
And they don't know that they can tell these kind of matches because they're not aware of it.
Well, they just don't watch the whole match.
Right, exactly.
They see
the
spots.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I think it was last year they had that. I think it was a PWG match, a triple threat ladder match maybe with them. I want to say the Motor City Machine Gun.
Oh, okay.
And then somebody else, I forget who. Maybe it was Daniels and Kazarian. It was the big ladder.
Oh, yeah, the ladder war thing.
Yeah, the ladder wars thing. Was that? Oh, that was Ring of Honor.
That was Ring of Honor,
was Ring of Honor. I liked it. It was fun. It felt like a spot fest. To me, I didn't, there wasn't like some heavy, really heavy. It was one of those things that a lot of people complain about where it's like, well, you know, back in the day, if you do this, you know, X move to somebody, it meant more than
it does now. Yeah,
and that match, to me personally, kind of exemplified that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I'm thinking of PWG. I don't know.
Well, their PWG match, the tag match they had where it was them and Adam Cole against Callahan and the Chris Brothers.
Was that the one we were there for?
Yeah.
It was so much fun, but those PWG matches, they're...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's what the whole Cornette criticizing over the grenade spot. I love that shit.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. I think it's hilarious.
Creative spots, creative storytelling.
Exactly. There's room for everything in wrestling. There's room for all that, and I love that grenade spot. I think it's hilarious. I think it's great. But anyways, no, I thought this was a match that had a lot of drama, a lot of depth to it. That was good. Next up, I love this. War Machine versus the Grills of Destiny.
Yeah, good match.
A lot of cursing in this match. It was so good. You know what? Now with Grills of Destiny, you really listen to this.
Well, also you expect it.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
War Machine was getting in on the cussing, too.
Yeah,
there was cussing from everybody.
I'm telling you, I could watch War Machine do frog splashes all day long.
Hanson suicide dive.
I know.
I can watch that all day long.
I can watch that too. It's fantastic. Dude, Tama Tonga.
Oh, he's awesome.
One of my favorite wrestlers.
He's
right
incredible.
Now. He's so good, man. He's so freaking fluid. And that bit where both men were doing that slithering thing around the prone member of War Machine was great. Mm-hmm. It's so creepy. It's so weird. This was a really, really hard hitting match.
Yeah, I mean, so much so, in fact, that earlier in the match, there was this whole stretch where Tonga Loa and Ray Rowe were just like no selling moves on each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
German suplex
stands right back up.
No sells.
Yeah. What do you think about that? I like that stuff.
I like it at the
right
part of the
match. Exactly, yeah.
The whole match is no selling, they get tiresome.
A couple of crazy brutes.
Especially early on the match.
Right. It's okay to do that stuff. Yeah, totally. I like that.
Got a ref bump.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then Tonga Loa absolutely destroys Ray Rowe with a chair.
Was this... No, Goto got hit with...
An unprotected headshot.
An unprotected headshot. But I'm pretty sure that chair was made from paper mache.
It looked like it. Yeah. The seat just popped right out.
It popped right out, I'm pretty sure.
But Ray Rowe got his hand up, I believe.
Okay.
To protect his
But
Tonga Loa hit the...
Yeah, I think I remember that. Yeah. So much of this, I'm like trying to recall simply because that final match took so much out of me. And then I was like going back, I was like, hold on, let me see if I remember these matches. So I'm very appreciative of your extensive notes here. But anyways, Guerrillas of Destiny picked up the one with Guerrilla Warfare.
Yeah.
And they are the new. Do you think those titles are going to go back to War Machine at Long Beach?
I don't know.
Announced. I don't know either.
I don't know. We'll get to that when we review the card. Because I have a theory.
So, boom, right there. Bullet Club.
Yeah. Well,
wins
also
predictions for me. We'll shrug it off. Give me my congratulations.
Good job.
Yeah.
I don't know how strategic it was other than you just wanted Bullet Club to win all the time. That's why I'm kind of like, okay, you won.
No, I had a feeling it was going to be Bullet Club heavy.
Because Bullet Club is still popular in the States. So they're going to have...
Because half that crowd is going to have Bullet Club shirts on. But also, I think they made some really good moves. I think the Cody coming on strong, and I think Marty Scurll is a really good move. And so
yeah,
I was like,
disappointed he wasn't on the show.
Yeah, I know. But I really felt, I'm like, okay, they need to sort of give them a kick in the butt a little bit. And I thought it was going to start at the top with Kenny possibly winning. And I thought that match and the participation of Bullet Club alone was enough for me to say, oh, yeah, my gut was right on this one, because that was such a Bullet Club-heavy thing and a lot of questions about what's going to happen with Cody.
Yes.
And
well, we'll get to that in the main event.
It was so good.
We'll get to that in the main event.
Speaking of Cody, next up, Michael Elgin versus Cody.
This is kind of an okay match.
Yeah, this was what it was. I wonder if maybe their style of wrestling might have just been too off. I feel like these guys could, but I'd rather see Michael Elgin versus Cody at PWG where they could be weirder and looser. This felt like a straight-up match.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's good.
Cody's character work was all really good.
Yeah, Cody's fantastic. Cody's flipping great. And he was a bit more Bullet Club branded this time. Didn't walk out with anybody, but he did have black and white pants on.
Yes. Same boots from Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
With Bullet Club logo.
Bullet Club logo.
New shirt.
New pro wrestling t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. No, he's great, man.
Oh, yeah. Cody's fantastic.
And at the end of this, he put on the headset and he said, "Give me Okada in Long Beach."
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. So,
and that was,
did you watch the presser afterwards?
No.
It was great. I saw
a little bit of video where he was like talking to Okada and like spit water on him or something.
It was Coors Light, baby.
Coors Light.
I wonder if they even have an endorsement deal. Because there's nothing but Coors Light on that table. It's hilarious.
That's true.
Okay, so next up was the ticking time bomb.
Yes.
Romu Takahashi versus Kushida.
For the
fantastic
match. For the junior
this
heavyweight
was
title.
So good. This felt like they can say about any two given wrestlers in a match, these guys hate each other. It feels like these guys hate each other.
What, the first 5 to 7 minutes of this match? Was all strikes?
Yes, it was all strikes. We had an extended.
They were pulling each other's hair to like glare at each other's face and stuff
Yeah, they're all in their grills and stuff. We had an extended chop sequence.
Yes.
Where they were just destroying each other with
overhand
chops.
Kushida, I mean, we haven't watched New Japan for a little while, so I don't know how long he's had his new ring gear.
Mm-hmm.
He's gotten rid of the Marty McFly vest and denim shirt.
He's still heavy on the time travel thing, though.
He is. I don't think that's going anywhere.
No, it's not.
But he has a new video package.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He's wearing an orange button-up shirt now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's got a new finisher.
With all sorts of time travel related patches on it.
Yeah. Mostly Back to the Future. but his new shorts and boots.
Oh, they're
knee
great.
Pads are spectacular.
What am I talking about? Like on the...
Spectacular.
It was like the crisp. I love crisp gear. So crisp.
He's got that iridescent...
Oh, it's great.
Fabric. It's fantastic.
That dude was sitting around 2K17.
I know. That's what I thought, too.
He said, make this person who does my costumes. Yeah, this was brutal, and there was some. I really want them to stop doing the sunset flip powerbomb.
I know that one last night.
That was so nasty because it was to the outside. It was from the apron to the outside.
Yeah, that's how it typically is. But
yeah,
but Kushida didn't land flat on his back. It was more on his shoulders.
It looked like his head looked like brains were gonna go everywhere.
I know.
Oh, it was terrible.
I was worried that he had actually. Got his bell rung pretty
good.
Dude,
I can't stand watching that.
Before that happened, though, there was this awesome spot where they were fighting brawl on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Kushida puts Takahashi on a chair between... So there's two barriers.
Yeah.
There's one that separates the ringside area from... There's like a little pathway in between.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's
after
like
that...
like a press set.
Yeah. And then there's another guardrail.
Yeah.
Behind which is the audience.
Right.
So Kushida set up a chair... against the guardrail that's right by the audience.
Yeah.
And they set up another chair in front of the other guardrail, ran and did like a springboard drop kick onto Takahashi, sending Takahashi into the audience.
Yeah, he went flying.
It was pretty crazy.
It was fantastic.
And there was that whole spot. Well, and then after that, Kushida starts working over Takahashi's left arm, mm-hmm. setting him up for the hoverboard lock.
Right.
And then they were on the top rope, and Kushida had that hoverboard lock in up there for a while and did like a suplex
off the
top rope. Yeah. Still holding on to the lock.
Yeah.
So he was really working that left arm. And then Kushida hit, I guess, Back to the Future as his new finisher.
Okay.
Some sort of package pile driver type.
Yeah.
Off the second rope, but both men too exhausted, too beat up for Kushida to take advantage. Until Takahashi finally taps after a really extended sequence with him in the hoverboard lock.
Yeah.
There's a couple times... where we'll talk about it later, where someone's in a submission hold, and they really... It reminded me of Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It's a match where HBK is in the ankle lock forever.
Oh, God, it was so good.
And it was more so in the Intercontinental title match that really reminded me of that.
God, this was only 20 minutes. It felt longer.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, boy, they really... Because they, like, immediately, that's why...
There was no build-up
in this match.
No.
It was just they immediately started going into it. It was great. It was fantastic. So, yeah, Kushida, for I think they said the second time.
Won the Best of Super Juniors and then
picked
won
up
the title right after, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this was a fantastic match, and if it wasn't for the main event, this would probably be on the match of the night because this was so good. So the next up, we had the Gauntlet match for the...
No, Lumberjack match.
The Lumberjack match for the...
Overweight... Championship. Minoru Suzuki and Hirooki Goto.
Mm-hmm.
Goto only brought out, what, four members of Chaos with him? To serve as Lumberjacks.
Goose, Explosion, Yano.
Ishii. And Jado.
Okay, and Jado, okay.
And then Suzuki brought out all of Suzuki.
Yeah, everybody came out there.
And Zack Sabre Jr. looked, I don't know if it was uncomfortable or just didn't know what to do with all the brawling. You know,
I kind of noticed that, too. Like I kind of felt
it didn't like come off as natural for him.
It looked like, you know what it kind of reminded me of, like when Blue Meanie got beat up by JBL. Like Blue Meanie was like, man, I'm not sure if I should go near JBL, but I'm going to. And then he got beat up. I wonder if Zack Sabre Jr. had like I don't know like accidental backstage beef with Ishii.
You know? Oh, I'm just guessing he hasn't been in matches like that before.
Maybe yeah, no, it could be. It could
I don't
be.
Know.
He's like, how do I do any of my weird technical wrestling stuff?
I know.
Like,
I'm here outside of the ring with all these people fighting around me. So they got to a point where he just started dropping European uppercuts on everybody. And that was great.
Yeah.
There's a great spot where Suzuki's outside talking trash to Jushin Liger.
Mm-hmm.
And then Liger throws a chair at Suzuki.
That was good. Yeah, there was a lot of it. I mean, they really made use of the whole lumberjack aspect of this. Well, you typically hate lumberjack matches.
I don't really care for them.
This was good, though.
Yeah, it was fine.
Because this was a bit different. Like, the WWEs are always so cheesy.
Yeah.
This felt more like gang warfare.
Yeah, it did.
Somebody gets out the outside, and they just, like, jump them. Because usually lumberjacks is like, oh, you got heels, you got faces.
Well, usually the problem with lumberjack matches is that they typically aren't aligned with either the competitors.
Right, there's no motivation.
It's usually just heels and faces.
Yeah, exactly.
Heels and faces just fight each other, whether they have motivation to do it or not.
Right, exactly.
Or motivation to help either party in the ring.
But there was a lot of outside the ring action in this. There was so much outside of the ring action. I liked it a lot.
One point, there's a ref bump.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge brawl. Everybody's in the ring just brawling.
Because of that super old ref.
Yeah.
It's not Red Shoes, like super old
ref.
It's
Tiger Hattori, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. The ring kind of clears out. Goto hits GTR, goes for the pin, and then Taichi, who wasn't one of the lumberjacks, comes in and pulls the ref out before he gets the three count.
At that point, I realized I had won predictions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Taichi then attacked Goto with it. He, like, blasted him.
First
with,
in the back and then right in the head.
Yeah, and you could tell, like, even on the back shot, he went a little easy because I think he knew that chair was going to fall apart.
Gimmicked.
It was so gimmicked because any black... And you know what? I love this. I love this. You can hit somebody on the head with a gimmicked...
Also, I think this seat was plastic.
Yeah, whatever it was so ready to give.
Yeah.
It was so ready to give. It was great. I love it. I like when people are safe.
Yes.
And it's funny because I read, God, I don't know. So there was an update because I was like, what? How is Shibata doing these days anyway?
Yeah.
And
I heard he was still in the hospital, I thought.
I didn't get a word of him if he's in the hospital or not, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was. But apparently New Japan wants to keep him in the company as a coach.
That's
for the
idea.
Dojo.
That's a great idea.
Maybe like the U.S. dojo if they decide to open it up.
Yeah.
So that would be awesome. And I was reading up. I don't know if it's recent. I thought this was from a while ago, but Kenny Omega was talking about Shibata and saying, you know, there's even a way to do strong style safely.
I read that too, yeah.
Was that from a while ago?
Was it recent? It's been the last 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. So it's fairly recent.
Relatively. After the chair shot to Goto, Suzuki hits him with a Gotch pile driver picks up the win.
Yeah.
And then Suzuki Goon is celebrating in the ring.
Dude, that pile driver.
That jump.
There was so much head under his legs. Like, how are you not dead right now? That did not kill you.
And then Yoshihashi is incredibly irate, goes after Suzuki.
I don't like
that. So that's our next feud for the never open weight title.
Yeah. I really hope Suzuki, like, it's like some W Steve W shit, pulls out a Ulysses Killer. Just blast them. Unprotected.
I kind of feel like Suzuki could do that with a kick.
Yeah, I think he could too. Yoshihashi's totally going to win that title, though.
No, he's not.
He is. I guarantee he's going to win. I don't want him to.
He's not going
to
win it.
But that's your... See, here's my thing. I am able to take my own personal hatred of Yoshihashi out of the equation.
Well, I have no animosity with Yoshihashi.
You can't stand him either. He's a black charisma hole.
Doesn't bother me. I'm not going to buy his t-shirts, but he doesn't bother me.
He's winning that title.
No, he's not.
I love Suzuki, though.
Suzuki's great.
I want him to keep it.
He's going to keep it.
Don't worry.
Suzuki's going to keep it.
I'm doing my prediction early on this one. Whenever they fight for that title. What's their next big pay? What's their Survivor Series?
Is it the G1 Finals?
Oh, maybe.
Oh, there's a King of Pro Wrestling, too, I think, in the fall.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. So anyways, next up we had Naito versus Tanahashi.
We talked about it a little bit. That IC title is beat to hell.
It's good. There's one plate missing.
One plate missing, one plate about to come off, a chunk of the main plate gone.
A giant chunk of the middle plate is gone.
And then another piece is all bent up.
You know, man, I'm kicking myself for not seeing this, because the entire storyline of him destroying that IC title, they couldn't have gone any further with it.
I know.
Like, I mean, they could have had him, like, burn it or something, like, light it, put it on fire. But this makes total sense.
It makes total sense. I just didn't know if they would put the belt on Tanahashi when he has a torn bicep.
I just didn't figure they'd put it on him. Honestly, I didn't figure they'd put him on regardless, because Naito is so hot right now, and him and that IC title are so connected. But it did kind of make sense, like, in the lead-up.
I did like how the commentary team... Oh, it made perfect sense. The commentary team was talking about Naito saying that there was too many belts in New Japan, and that he literally wanted to destroy the Intercontinental title, so they wouldn't use it anymore, especially with the U.S. title being brought into existence.
That's great. Man, see, this is the thing. This is we should do a count out top 10 things. I actually thought we should do top 10 reasons WWE is better than New Japan, and then do the flip side of it, top 10 reasons New Japan, because I think there's a lot to be learned from both sides.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things with New Japan is I would love after the Okada Omega match, big old press conference, and Okada was fantastic. No idea what he said. No clue. When Gato dropped that promo afterwards, would love to have heard what he said. No idea what he said.
Well, you know, apparently somebody told us that they transcribed those promos.
Oh, really?
Them
okay.
On New Japan's English website.
I would like something in real time while I'm watching mm-hmm. that experience. And also just their, man, if they just had a freaking streaming app. How great would it be? You know how the WWE has all those collections, like the Rock's Road to Stardom and stuff
that? Yeah.
How much? That would be such a big selling point. It's like you're asking me to jump into this universe of yours without really knowing anything about anybody except for the few stragglers from WWF, or WWE, rather. I would love to see 10 matches building up Naito to where he is now, et cetera, for all those guys.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Great.
That'd be really cool.
So,
anyways, back to this Intercontinental title match. Tanahashi attacks Naito before...
It had a fantastic finish.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did seem off.
Before Naito even got his suit off.
That was fun.
Bell rings, Tanahashi goes on the offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty quickly, Naito turns the table, starts working Tanahashi's injured arm. Mm-hmm. Worked that over for the remainder of the match.
Yeah.
Tanahashi responds by working Naito's right knee, which is wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
Which he has wrapped up all the time.
Yeah.
There's this great spot where Tanahashi hits high fly flow
mm-hmm.
On Naito on the outside.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was cool. The match wasn't bad.
It's one of those things they didn't feel as
crisp as their Wrestle Kingdom
match.
They set
the bar so high at Wrestle Kingdom. Both these guys are fantastic, obviously.
Naito hit Tanahashi with Destino.
Mm-hmm.
Tanahashi kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
Tanahashi hit Naito with a high fly flow. Naito kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
The finish saw Tanahashi put Naito in the clover leaf
mm-hmm.
for a good 2 or 3 minutes.
He was there for a while, and he was getting really low on it.
I know. I don't think I've seen a clover leaf sunk in before.
He was bent in half. It was great. It was fantastic, and eventually just tapped out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your new Intercontinental Champion, Tanahashi, who will be defending that prestigious championship against the one Billy Gunn.
The Bullet Club Hunter.
The Bullet
Club. Is he still a Bullet Club Hunter?
I haven't seen who's the main Bullet Club Hunter.
It was Yoshitatsu,
Yoshitatsu,
right?
Yeah. I haven't seen him in a while either. So I'm not sure. Maybe they're going to do an emergency repackage of Billy Gunn. I don't know. They're going to add him to LIJ maybe. That's terrible.
Oh, we didn't talk about the end of the Kushida-Takahashi match that Bushi came out and attacked Kushida.
Oh, yeah. So I figured we'd be seeing them in Long Beach.
Yeah, it hasn't been announced yet, though.
Okay. But has Bushi been announced for a match?
Yeah, there's a... Titan, Dragon Lee, Volador Jr., and Jushin Liger against Takahashi, Bushi, Evil, and Sonata.
Mm.
That's on day one. Day two, there's only been five matches announced.
Okay.
I think that's it.
I wonder how long these shows are going to be.
Probably 4 hours.
Yeah.
3 to 4 hours. Anyways, we'll get to that.
Another 5.5 hour affair. I have to get there late.
Well, it starts at 5 o'clock in the evening. The shows do.
All right, cool. Right on.
So which brings us to our main event.
Oh my goodness gracious. This was fantastic. There was so much drama here, especially in the last 10 minutes. And then we're getting down to they announce it. You know,
that's one thing I like about
minutes,
New Japan is,
two minutes,
is even
1 minute,
you know, when
seconds.
You're 10 minutes into a match, generally they'll announce
yeah,
10 minutes
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah,
they're really
yeah,
good about
right,
letting
right,
the
right.
audience
yeah.
know how long, you know, they are into the match.
Yeah, like you noted this. Okada, he's up in his robe game.
He has a second robe.
He has two robes now. Yeah.
They both look exceptionally heavy.
Yeah. I'm glad that Omega, you know, I'm not huge on the Terminator angle with Kenny Omega because I feel like... Kind of like a cheesy... I love Terminator. I love it's a great movie. The second one was really good.
The first one's really good, too.
No, I know. I said the first one's great. The second one's
okay.
really good.
I didn't hear that.
I sort of think that they're like, the first one's best. Second
yeah,
one's
I agree.
Best.
I agree.
And then they just fall off a cliff.
Absolutely.
So anyways, But, so I'm glad that Kenny didn't come out with a cheesy plastic Terminator mask. This was a different Kenny Omega.
Yes.
This was a Kenny Omega who isn't coming into this. I feel like this was a Kenny Omega. The character Kenny Omega was coming out knowing that everybody says he's the best. As opposed to Wrestle Kingdom, when he felt he was destined to win the title, now he feels like he deserves the title. He should have the title. And the Young Bucks look serious,
mm-hmm.
you know, flanking him. He looked more serious. Mm-hmm. He looked like this was his match to lose.
Yeah.
Okada looked
well, like I think that was the thoughts of a large majority of the audience, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, certainly with us.
I know.
Yeah.
We both thought, oh, for sure.
For sure. Although I do think, I mean, I was never 100%.
Oh, I wasn't either.
He was going to win.
I mean, we both thought he was going to win the New Japan Cup.
Yeah.
Eliminated first round.
Yeah. I still think the strategy, and I thought this ages ago, of keeping the title on Okada going into the U.S. because he's the champion and there is the language barrier. Kenny Omega is Kenny Omega.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, people, he's a crossover guy. Like, anybody who's into wrestling past being a casual fan probably knows or has at least heard of him.
Yes.
And so you don't need the title on him.
No. Well, at least not the world heavyweight one.
No. With Okada, oh, you think he's going to pick up the U.S. title?
We'll get to that later.
Okay. With Okada, because there's the language barrier, you need something to grab on with him,
yeah.
And that's the title.
Yeah.
So I think that's a smart move. And in this case, there's no winner. You know, there's no loser.
Yeah.
So anyways, take us through the match, because this is a 60-minute time limit draw.
Yeah, there's a lot of notes here, and I probably could have wrote a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So the first bit of the match, they're kind of feeling each other out.
Yeah.
Some holds. Actually, some really quick back and forth mat wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, I should also point out, I felt there was two stories. I thought that Kenny coming into this was the guy who felt that the belt was his. Okada, on the other hand, I felt like, A, he looked 3 inches taller than he does usually. I don't know why. I mean, that's just perception, maybe. But, B, I felt like this was the culmination of his year so far, in that he's looking at Kenny Omega, and Kenny Omega is thinking to himself, well, I should have this title, and Okada is thinking to himself, you have no idea the year I've been through,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I'm not giving this away to anybody.
Yeah.
I've been through everything. I've been through everything. I am the title.
Yeah.
That was kind of the story here.
In terms of the in-ring, some of the spots, I don't know if they did this intentionally or this is me just projecting kind of what I hope they were going to do,
mm-hmm.
is touch on some of the damage that Okada's taken through the mm-hmm. year so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, sure.
So the first part
the
of
knee stuff,
First part especially, Kenny was really working the knee.
Yeah.
After Okada did a move over the top rope.
And commentary is really pushing that.
Yeah. Tweaked his knee, and then Kenny starts working it, did a shin breaker on top of one of the tables in the ringside area.
Yeah.
That was stiff.
Yeah.
So for the first half of the match, especially, Okada seemed like he was held back. Okada's one of the best sellers in the business.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Seemed like he was somewhat held back by his knee. Tide kind of turned when Okada pushed Kenny off a guardrail where he's trying to do another moonsault,
mm-hmm.
and then Okada hit his running crossbody over the guardrail.
It's crazy how athletic Okada is without looking like it. Like,
I know.
You look at Kenny Omega, and you're like, oh, my God, dude is
so fast, so quick.
He's so fast, and he's so athletic. You look at Ricochet, and you look at his body, you can already tell this kid. He's the most athletic guy in the room. Okada is deceptively athletic.
Yeah, he is.
Because it doesn't look like he's that athletic.
Well, he doesn't look like he moves exceptionally quickly.
Right, exactly.
He's reasonably explosive.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, he can, you know, get some good air on dropkick instantly.
He gets massive air on dropkicks.
Yes.
He is my – that's my point. He is supremely athletic without looking like
it. And I think part of it is because he's tall. They say he's 6'4".
Yeah.
So I think that's a large part of it. Kenny eventually gets the upper hand, hits the top rope moonsault, which he almost slipped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he was sort of, it was like on a tightrope up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit that. I mean, this match had so much back and forth. I didn't write down all of it. There was a great spot where Okada hits a Death Valley driver.
Oh my gosh. That looked nasty. That looked really nasty.
And then Okada dropkicked Kenny into the guardrail. Mm-hmm. That was stiff. Right after that, Okada set up a table on the outside.
Yeah.
Knew that was going to come into play at some point.
The entire time, the Young Bucks are just outside, like, yelling at the ref, saying, are you letting him do this? What the heck's going on here?
Kenny hit a superplex. But it wasn't like a standard one, you know, where he kind of crosses the legs?
Yeah.
And he did that on a superplex.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah, me neither. That was like, and everybody gasped, including myself.
He had to hold him up there for a little bit.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was crazy.
You know what I love about this, too, is that I don't know if it's because they know each other so well. I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's a little bit they're both, like, supremely professional and know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Those cameras were able to go in tight on their faces so many times, and I didn't see one spot be called. Mm-hmm. I did not see one spot called. And there were times when the camera would get close up when they were in a position that they should be calling their, they should be telling each other what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the camera's way back. They got a great zoom lens. Their heads are near each other and they should be talking to each other.
Yeah.
And they're not.
Yeah.
They're fully in character. They're fully in the fight. That's what helps lend credence to the fight that we're seeing. It's fantastic.
It is. Okada hits two German suplexes, maintains wrist control, hits a Rainmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny kicks out at two.
Yeah.
This spot was awesome. Kenny, Okada tried for...
Oh, my gosh, this was amazing.
Kenny grabbed his legs and powerbomb. The timing was perfect.
It really was.
Perfect. There's a couple spots in this match where the timing was so perfect.
So Okada, they're running, they come off the ropes at each other. Okada goes into a drop kick. Kenny catches him.
And powerbombs him.
Like, in midair.
Yeah, and lightning quick.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, that was insane. They did, you know, they don't, that's another thing the New Japan needs to do more of, replays. WWE sometimes do too many replays. They need to do more replays.
Yeah. Eventually, Okada puts Kenny on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Top rope elbow drop through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Okada hits Kenny with two more Rainmakers.
Yes.
At this point,
this was great.
Cody comes out and tries to throw in the towel. And of course,
number one, Cody looked like a million bucks.
Yeah, he did. Of course, you know, you think back to his challenge earlier in the night that he wanted to face Okada in Long Beach.
I know.
So Cody is Bullet Club. We thought for life, but it looks like Cody's just looking out for himself.
Well, yeah, man.
He's stopping the match, keeping Kenny from winning the belt so he could face Okada.
Yeah.
As champion in Long Beach.
Yeah. Ooh.
The complexity of the situation.
But he's yelling at the Bucks, and the thing is, Cody has a good point. Omega was dead at that point. He said, look at him. He can't take this anymore. He already took two Rainmakers.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Throwing the towel. They said, no.
And then all of Bullet Club comes out ringside.
All of Bullet Club all comes Bullet down. Club. Yeah. I like that Hangman Page had on, like, a proper suit.
I know.
He had, like, a vest, tie. And I'm like, you're Hangman Page. Where's your, like, little rope thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Everybody else is wearing, except for Cody.
Yeah, Fale comes out wearing sweatpants and a Bullet Club shirt.
Shortly after that, Kenny finally hits One Winged Angel on Okada, but it's right near the rope.
Oh, my gosh, it was great.
And right as the rest hand was about to go down for three, Okada got his foot on the rope.
Right.
And everybody saw that, like, oh, my gosh, that was it. That was the moment that Kenny won
the belt. Because right before that, Cody throws the towel to Kenny Omega, who then, like, wipes the sweat off it and is about to put down Okada. Okada reverses that. Then he takes a towel, wipes himself down with it, and throws it at Kenny. And you have the entire Bullet Club for the rest of the thing. Nobody's acting heelish. Nobody's trying to get involved. They're all just...
into the match.
Into the match. And you can see the faces on some of these guys. Like, I looked at, like, a one shot of Hangman Page just sort of lingering in the background. And you could tell this dude's in awe.
Yeah.
He's in awe. He's loving every second of it. It's fantastic.
Kenny's going to do, what's his running knee called?
The trigger, hair trigger? I think it's hair trigger, isn't it?
Or is it?
Something trigger.
Whatever, he's about to do that. So he does his pose. Okada grabs his arm and gives him a Rainmaker.
Yeah.
Out of
Rain
nowhere.
Trigger. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Rain Trigger.
Oh, that's when he does that's like the ripcord thing.
Oh, okay.
Or just the running knee, I think. It's something else.
Let's see if there's another word for it then, because I'm not seeing hair trigger. No, it's all just news about
all right, whatever.
And Seth Rollins.
Whatever. Kenny again tries for the One Winged Angel. Okada reverses it into a tombstone.
Yeah.
This is probably my favorite spot of the whole match. Okada, this is, I don't know, like probably 10 minutes left. Okada sets up Kenny for a Rainmaker.
Oh, my God, I love
and
this
And Kenny avoided it by collapsing.
He just collapsed.
And the timing on it was so perfect.
He went for the Rainmaker, and as he's going in, Kenny Omega just collapses like this onto his knees. It was fantastic.
It was so, so good. Good.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, about 5 minutes left in the match, Kenny hits Okada with three knees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Kenny doesn't go for the pin. Instead, eats a drop kick.
And Cyrus, Don Callis, was like imploring him. He said, pin him,
yes,
pin him now.
Because
he's going to heel come too.
And then Okada hits a bridging German suplex
mm-hmm.
with like 3 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny kicks out.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that, Kenny goes for the small package. Okada kicks out. Okada hits a Rainmaker with 30 seconds left.
Oh, my gosh.
And both,
so good.
Both Kenny and Okada are just laid out on the mat.
Yeah.
Okada rolls over, starts crawling over to Kenny,
yeah.
and is maybe a foot away when time runs out.
And you can hear the commentator say, you know, 20 seconds, 10 seconds, and then time runs out right as he's reaching him.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely amazing. There was one part where I'm trying to remember the exact moment. I think it might have been when Kenny hit. Oh, man. I forget when, but Kenny literally started crying.
Mm-hmm.
At one moment. I think it might have been after... It might have been after he hit the one-wing angel and Okada...
Got his foot on the rope.
It might have been that. But the level of drama in this match is unreal.
You know, there's one thing I wish they had done. This is, you know, totally a minor detail.
Mm-hmm.
That at some point within the last 7 minutes...
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering why for the last... You know, after Okada reversed the one-winged angel into a tombstone, Kenny never went for it again.
Right.
Never
right,
did.
Right.
Like, if they just did one spot where Kenny tried to get Okada up but couldn't because mm-hmm. he was so exhausted.
Yeah.
And then explain why he never tried to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. That's,
it's
that's
a small
good.
Little
that's
detail.
Good. You know what I really like, though, is I sort of mentioned this when Bullet Club comes down, they're not messing with Gato. And Gato's just a man by himself out there trying
yeah,
to root
yeah.
a guy on. He's probably sitting there watching his creation. I don't know how much of the booking in terms of the actual matches he does. He might just be a storyline guy. I'm fascinated to find out.
Yeah, me too.
But if he had a hand in booking the actual main event and he's watching his creation play out, that's got to be a very unique experience.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's really, to have these players at his disposal, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. to be painting mm-hmm. with these, you know.
Telling
these brushes,
stories, yeah.
It's got to be something else. It's fantastic.
So both Okada and Kenny Omega are just...
Dead.
Laying in the ring, exhausted,
yeah,
beat up. Eventually, Kenny he rolls to the outside. You know, I love that New Japan brings out the people with the ice bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they start icing. Shoot, Kenny's neck.
Well, I like that there was a close up on the dot coming down to
look at Kenny's eyes,
and you see right before he does that, Kenny's going like this, yeah. And it's probably just him saying, you know, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do your stuff. Though.
I know.
Act like I'm not.
I know. But then there's this one when Kenny's laying on the outside and the Young Bucks are kind of standing over him.
Mm-hmm.
He points to his forehead, mm-hmm. and so the Young Bucks pour water on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nice little touches.
No, it was good. It was good. It was, yeah, it was, and you can tell everybody was there. This was not time. I mean, they did one bit kind of early on where they were doing the Terminator mm-hmm. thing. But there was no, like, I mean, there was a little bit of clowning a little bit towards the beginning, like a little bit of shit talking. But this was a high drama affair. It was obvious, yeah. like when Kenny said, he said something along the lines of, I'm not looking to top Wrestle Kingdom.
I want to do something different.
I want to do something different. I want to present its own experience, and then people can stack them up against each other if they want. But I want them to be two distinctly different. And that's what this was. This was a high drama bout. This was from both angles. There was so much going on. This wasn't just, you know, your typical sort of challenger, champion, heir apparent, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, the guy, the challenger of destiny, if you want, which we kind of feel like Kenny Omega is at some point. This is different than that. This was two roads that are coming together, and this is a different dramatic experience.
Yes. So, we covered that. Let's talk about how this show is going to impact what we're going to see in Long Beach.
Okay,
unless you want to mention something else.
No, this is the press conference afterwards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Great, because it was Okada comes in, and the other members of Chaos are kind of milling about. They all shake his hands and stuff, and there's like a bunch of Coors Lights. And I looked at the backdrop behind them, and there's no Coors Lights logos there. And I was like, I don't know what deal they have, but it's hilarious because everybody opens them up. And I'm like, I know after I've spent 60 minutes of exercise, the first thing I want is a Coors Light. The Coors Light. But they all toast and they're all drinking stuff, and then Cody comes out of nowhere and he starts running down Okada and says, you know, here's your challenge. I want you in Long Beach, blah, blah, blah. And he takes a sip of Coors Light, spits at Okada. Okada is just Okada always comes off like, I'm trying to think of the analogy here, because there's a character that I'm thinking of where it's like just one thing after another, you get dumped on and dumped on, and you give and you give and you give and you can't give any more, and everybody's coming after you, and he exemplifies that.
Yes.
And I don't know what he said during his press conference, but the way he delivered it was so exhausted and spent.
Well, the same thing was true with his promo in the ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was sitting in the corner for most of it.
At one point, you're right, and at one point in the press conference, he just sort of has his head down and he's talking, and it's like the most dramatic thing. It's like an actor up there. I mean, it is. That's what it is. But it was absolutely amazing. And, you know, freaking Cody, like, spits at him. And he doesn't retaliate. He just sort of, like, you know, he's still a champion. He just sort of takes it as it comes because he knows this is just one more in the long line. And what's going to be his breaking point? And Gato goes after Cody a little bit. Like, he, you know, I think he, like, he made some hand movement and the Coors Light just sort of falls and, like, starts spilling, and Okada looks over and he sees the beer coming towards his title and he just sort of moves the title out of the way and
that's great.
Starts sweeping it away a little bit. And now your hand is sticky with beer.
Yeah.
And it's like you're the champion. Like you just get this feeling of, is any of this really worth it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's a great moment. It's so good. But anyways, moving on to Long Beach.
Yeah, so it's been confirmed we're going to get Okada versus Cody for the heavyweight title.
Yeah.
It's the main event of night one.
And it's been pointed out that Cody has a Ring of Honor world title shot just prior to that.
On June 23rd, I think.
So there's the possibility, although I think it's pretty doubtful unless Cody actually signs with somebody.
Yeah, well, I think he said he's done with Impact, or it's been reported he's done with Impact.
Yeah. That's not going to happen.
So I have this idea. It probably won't come to fruition.
All right, let's hear it.
It was just announced today that Kenny is going to take part in the U.S. title tournament in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I would think they want to establish this new belt with a top star.
Okay.
So let's look at the people. We have the card for the first round here in front of us.
Yeah.
People in the tournament are Michael Elgin, Kenny Omega. They're taking on each other in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Ishii and Naito. Juice Robinson, Zack Sabre Jr., Jay Lethal, Hangman Page. Those are the eight men taking part in this tournament.
Okay.
Of those eight men, who do you see as people who would win, who could win?
Well, I mean, it kind of depends.
Because, like, I don't...
Do they want to go big, or do they not want to go big?
I would think they would want to go big.
You would think so.
Yes.
Like, that'd be... Yeah.
So, by that logic, I would think the most believable people would be Omega, Naito, and Jay Lethal.
Okay.
I don't think Naito's going to want to come over to the States. I don't think they're going to bring him over to the States
mm-hmm.
next year.
Yeah.
Jay Lethal makes sense
mm-hmm.
in that regard.
Yeah.
But what if the match last night was to establish Kenny Omega? You know, we already know he's on the same level as Okada, but
mm-hmm.
literally...
Yeah.
They went 60 minutes, no winner.
Yeah.
Kenny goes in Long Beach, wins that U.S. title. That title is instantly right up there with the world heavyweight title and the intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Then this U.S. title is on par with those two belts if Kenny wins it. I'm not saying he will. He probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been saying for a while that he wants to be a major part of this global expansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get the hottest guy, one of the hottest guys in wrestling as the U.S. champion. You know, and next year, assuming he resigns, he's wrestling here in the States. That's massive for New Japan.
Yeah.
And he can still, you know, obviously go to Japan for the major shows and defend the title.
It would also kind of solve the problem of will Kenny leave or won't he?
Yeah.
Let's get the title on him and see if that changes things. We'll see if that changes his perception of things. So, because I had a question on Twitter yesterday. I don't have my phone with me, so I don't know who it was. But they said, do you think New Japan is holding off on putting the title on Kenny because they know that he wants it before he leaves? And
this week would have been the perfect time to put it on him.
Exactly, yeah. See how he likes it, and then they could take it off him after 6 months.
Or have him drop it at Wrestle Kingdom next year at Okada.
Right, exactly.
In a rubber match. That made perfect sense.
Then he can do what he wants to do. So I would say no to that. I would think that Kenny Omega is the type that he cares more about the matches themselves than the outcome necessarily. Yes. Because the outcome is predetermined. The quality of the match is not.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go in there and say, I'm going to go out and have a 6-star match. You can try your damnedest. You might not.
Well, you only have control over so much of that, too.
Exactly. And so I think he cares more about the
he cares more about process than results.
The experience that he's providing the audience members than anything. And so I think if he feels like he's done everything he can, I don't think the belt matters. I think the belt is probably interesting to him.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the end-all, be-all.
No, I think it
putting
is
on the kind of match. And I honestly wonder if... I mean, here's the thing about this match. What spots in the Okada Omega 2... there was plenty in the first one that the WWE wouldn't let people do. But I didn't notice a whole lot of spots in this that the WWE would say, no, we're not going to let you do that.
I can't really
maybe the top rope suplex, but they do superplexes.
No, superplexes are pretty common.
They do superplexes where there weren't a lot of drivers in this. They're not huge on the tombstones.
Couple tombstones, that was it.
I mean, this could have been maybe like the drop kick into the berry, but they do that. I mean, I think the question for Kenny Omega is, in terms of him signing, he said that he wants to face AJ Styles in a high stakes match.
Yeah.
The question for him is, will the WWE let him do
what he wants to do to tell the stories he wants to tell? Yeah.
Exactly. Or understanding what their framework is, could you tell those stories?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, like you said last night, I don't think there's anything in that match last night that would be... I mean, I think The Undertaker's really the only person that could still do the tombstone.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I don't even think Kane might do it on occasion, but I remember the last time he did it was.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I can think of.
On the other hand, would he find the challenge interesting to tell an amazing story?
Could be.
Within that context.
Especially, you know, especially say their match, AJ and Kenny's match at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Add the spectacle of 80,000 people watching it.
Yeah.
You know, trying to tell a story that translates all the way to the back row and 80,000 people. That's got to be a significant challenge.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I like your idea. I mean, it all depends on how, you know, whenever you introduce a new title, you know, you ask yourself, is it going to be the universal title or the television, you know, the European title?
How do they want to consider it? In terms of star power, it's got to be Kenny, Naito, or Jay Lethal.
Right. Or are they going to do something weird where they have, like, Michael Elgin win it? You know, is it going to be...
Yeah.
One of those type things. Is it going to be, well, we really like Juice Robinson. Let's see how far he can go with the title. I hope it's not. I hope it's Omega or Naito.
Yeah.
I'd love to see an Omega Naito finals.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to see that.
Well, it wouldn't be this way, the brackets.
Oh, the brackets are that way.
I mean, this is the matches, how they're listed here, are the brackets. Oh, wait, no, they're not. Sorry. New Japan has them up on their website. Let me pull them up real quick.
Let's take a look.
Because we could have a... Kenny Ishii final. So first round matches are Elgin Omega, Lethal Page, Robinson Sabre Jr., Ishii Naito. So
we can have Naito Omega. We can have Naito Ishii Zack Sabre.
Say Omega advances, Jay Lethal advances. So the semis would be Omega Lethal, Sabre advances, and Naito advances. Then we have Naito Sabre. So we could have Kenny Naito final. We could have Kenny Ishii, Kenny Zack Sabre Jr.
Mm-hmm.
All those would be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. could hypothetically win. I'd pipe him as the fourth most likely.
In the universe of New Japan, I'm going to say...
Oh, probably not.
In terms of, let's see, most likely, I'm going to say, well, let's see, early power rankings here. Omega, Naito.
Lethal.
Lethal.
Ishii.
I wouldn't put Ishii in there. Really? I mean, I've said that before about Ishii, but I wouldn't put him up there. Because I'm thinking of, like, placement within... Again, that goes back to where do you see them in the treating this belt.
Also, too, Bullet Club's still really, really popular in the States.
That's true.
But then we don't know how... What
they can't give it to Hangman Page?
No, Kenny. but we also don't know exactly what Cody's... or how Cody's actions last night are going to play into the Bullet Club story.
Yeah.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get some clarity on that at the next Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Is it Best in the World?
Best
in World are in the title.
Best in World.
So I remember.
Yeah, I don't know. Be interesting. Be interesting to see. Anyways, let us know what you guys how you guys felt about Dominion in the comments.
Yes, please.
And, until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Goodbye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.